by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this program tonight with Joe DeGeneva and his frustrations about getting any prosecutions against these wrongdoers in the Department of Justice and the FBI. Here we go with Joe DeGeneva.
Joining us now on the newsline, as he does every Monday at this time, is Joe DeGeneva, the former U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. And we have so much to talk about today, and I'm glad he's with us here on a federal holiday. Joe, thanks for joining us. You know, there was so much news, so many developments last week. But let me just start out by saying Michael Flynn, Roger Stone, and George Papadopoulos are all run through the ringer. Their lives are destroyed. They're bankrupted. They're looking at serious jail time. George Papadopoulos has already served time, only a couple of weeks, but still, for lying to an FBI agent. And yet Andrew McCabe, the former acting director of the FBI, who admitted to lying to FBI agents, in some cases on the day he was sworn in as the acting director, he gets a pass on his case. I mean, what's going on, Joe?
I'll tell you exactly what's going on. Just give me a second, okay?
Okay, take as much time as you want.
I have to control myself and not say things that are going to get you and me in trouble. Jesse Liu, the former United States Attorney for the District of Columbia, was a weak, useless United States Attorney. She screwed up the McCabe case. She didn't know what to do about it, so she eventually resigned, and she tried to become a senior executive at the Treasury Department. And then when the president found out that she had been complicit in this ridiculous recommendation for Roger Stone, he withdrew her nomination. That's fact one. We had an idiot U.S. attorney handling all these cases in the U.S. attorney's office. My alma mater, the place that I ran under Ronald Reagan. Second, D.C. juries. It is now very clear, based on the statements by the four person in the Roger Stone grand jury,
Juror 1261.
That she had a personal animus toward the president of the United States. She lied about her Twitter account. Should have never been on that jury. But let me just say this. This is not the only case where D.C. federal judges have done a screwy, lousy, awful job of questioning jurors about their biases. The same thing happened in the Scooter Libby case. At the end of the case, after Libby was convicted, some of the jurors went outside and they talked to the press. One of them was the foreman. He was the former Washington Post recorder. The first words out of his mouth were, "Why wasn't Dick Cheney in the dock too?" Let me just say this. A Republican cannot get a fair trial in the District of Columbia. And if they indicted McCabe, the jury was going to walk him. But you know what? You do it anyway. You indict him anyway. And if you can't get the grand jury to indict, if they refuse, you know what you do? You charge him with 7, 8, 9 misdemeanor false statements. It exists in the federal code. They can do it. They should have done it. This is outrageous. I don't blame Bill Barr for this. When you have a moron for a United States attorney who screws up the case, which is what Jesse Liu did, this pretty face, who they were all – this is a Bushy-type U.S. attorney. They were going to make her a star. she was going to be the Chinese American wonderful picture over there in the Treasury Department, and then the president finally figured it out. She was a nudge. She was a nothing. And he said, forget this, I'm withdrawing her nomination. McCabe should have been indicted. I don't blame Barr for this. I blame this moron, Jesse Liu, the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. She screwed up a series of cases because she did not have the guts to deal with politically sensitive cases. It's a disgrace.
Joe, I know you say, you know, they couldn't have gotten a conviction, but it's right there in the Inspector General's report. He admitted
anyway.
He lied. He admitted he lied. How can they not get a conviction? Or how can you not at least indict him anyway?
I am all for charging him and taking your chances with the jury. I'm just saying that in this situation, the D.C. juries are no longer reliable because, A, they are so biased that I believe the first thing a Republican or Trump official should do if they are indicted in any case in the District of Columbia is immediately ask for a change of venue to Alabama.
Well, are any of these people going to be indicted this year, or do we have to just hope and pray for a second Trump term and just hope that that's when the swamp is going to be drained?
I think I now, after venting, which I needed to do because I can't stand what this woman, Jesse Liu, has done to my office. I'm embarrassed by her. I'm embarrassed by what she did. And those other two of the four prosecutors who resigned from the Stone case are assistant U.S. attorneys in my old office. You know what I would do if they did that to me? When they came in and said to this guy, Shea, who's the interim U.S. attorney, either you go along with our 9-year recommendation and we're going to resign, I would have said, gentlemen, I want your four credentials, your assistant U.S. attorney credentials to get you into this building right now. Give them to me. This is your last day on the job. Get the hell out of my office. How in the world could any U.S. attorney be extorted by four assistant U.S. attorneys? By the way, did you notice that there's an assistant in front of their name? You know what that means? That means they're under the authority of somebody else.
This is what's going on up there, is that we can't get any prosecutions. And the Justice Department keeps telling us that, oh, the rumors and so forth, they can't talk about grand juries. Those are held in secret. So we don't know exactly what's been going on with Durham and so forth and his investigations. So everyone is sort of getting impatient about what's going on. Now, Judge Jeanine recently had a program, and she laid out why Hillary had this secret server. And here we go with Judge Jeanine.
Hello, and welcome to Justice. I'm Judge Jeanine Pirro. Thanks for being with us tonight. Now to my opening statement. It wasn't about convenience, and this is not old news. She set up the personal server to prevent us from learning her private business. And it is only because of a government watchdog group and an ethical federal judge that we found out why this week. Why? Because Bill and Hillary Clinton are the Bonnie and Clyde of American politics. Now follow me on this one. Why would a woman, a lawyer no less, one experienced many times over in the ways of Washington, risk placing classified information, our live assets, the placement of satellites, drones, and our most secret plans on an unprotected, non-government, non-capturable server? Why would she violate federal regulations upon which she was schooled just before she became Secretary of State, not to mention violate federal criminal laws that would put her in jail? She's too smart to do that. Why would she take the time to make the effort to hide, destroy, and delete 33,000 emails? Now we know. She did it for the most selfish of reasons, the oldest of motives. She did it for greed and for power and for the almighty dollar. She did it to hide her shady Clinton Foundation dealings. She did it in order to do favors for Clinton donors and to put a price tag on our State Department. The same duo who came up with a scheme to rent out the Lincoln bedroom is back in business with a new and bigger scheme, one that is more far-reaching and worldwide, one that violates not only the law, but all codes of moral and ethical conduct in government. A couple willing to sell anything to the highest bidder for money and power. This is why the emails were hidden from the beginning. And this is why they were ultimately destroyed and deleted. This week, we find out top State Department aide Cheryl Mills, formerly of the President Bill Clinton impeachment team, aligned with Hillary ever since, and also on that private server, was advised in 2012 that a Freedom of Information request was made for the number of email accounts used by Hillary Clinton. Now, dozens of senior officials throughout the State Department, including Clinton's immediate staff, obviously concerned, exchange emails with the secretary and Cheryl Mills. They actually use the personal account to discuss the official business and advise her of this FOIL request. Their response to the request? There were no records. They were in active defense mode to hide their scheme. And when truth is put to the lie, that in fact there was an email account, they say they made a mistake. Had they been honest, that personal server would have been exposed years earlier. And also this week, we find out a clear pay-to-play relationship between the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton State Department. An urgent email from Doug Band, formerly assistant to President Bill Clinton, now overseeing the Clinton Foundation, to Cheryl Mills and Uma Abedin, those two jewels on that private server, request that a huge Clinton Foundation donor meet a high State Department contact in Lebanon. The individual paid the price of admission, folks. Gilbert Chigori gave between $1 and $5 million to the Clinton Foundation and pledged $1 billion to the Clinton Global Initiative. So, of course, arrangements are made for him to meet with Jeff Feltman, the former U.S. ambassador to Lebanon, the country where Chigori was doing business. Abedin, ironically, paid both by the foundation and the State Department, immediately responds with, "I'll talk to Jeff," ignoring the agreement between Hillary and President Obama to create a wall between that Clinton Foundation and the State Department, confident that it would never be found out. And when we learned there was a private server, what happens? You do what anyone looking to hide the evidence does. You erase, you conceal, you hide, you destroy. Now, I've told you this before. The Clinton Foundation is nothing more than a money laundering operation parading as a charitable foundation, where estimates are that only 15% of its money goes to charities, the rest to expenses, a veritable slush fund for Clinton operatives and ex-employees, a convenient way to get money from foreign countries and donors not allowed to contribute to presidential campaigns, but willing to dump hundreds of millions of dollars into a foundation of a powerful Secretary of State and possible future president. Why and for what? For access, for information, for power. Folks, politicians on a much lower level, of course, have gone to jail for much less. And we find out this week that when the FBI, three separate offices, approached the Department of Justice to commence an investigation into this so-called not-for-profit 501c3, the Department of Justice refuses to do so. You know, and Fifth Amendment pleading Lois Lerner, when she opens files on small conservative organizations, she gets away with it, too. A few years' vacations, a bonus, and a pension. So it's no surprise that the DOJ refuses to investigate the Clinton Foundation. No surprise at all. The collusion between Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton was on display for all to see in an astounding meeting on a tarmac in Phoenix while an investigation of Bill Clinton's wife was being conducted by Loretta Lynch. And consider this one. Isn't it curious how Miss Lynch is willing to listen to the FBI when they recommend not going forward with charges against Hillary Clinton? But when the FBI recommends going forward with a criminal probe on a blatant pay-to-play bribery investigation of the Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, their answer is a resounding no. And you know what, folks? The Clintons, they're not even grateful. They are classless. Take a listen.
The FBI director said, when he testified before Congress, he had to amend his previous day statement that she had never received any emails marked classified. They saw two little notes with a C on it. This is the biggest load of bull I ever heard.
You know, the FBI's ability to lose decades of hard-earned and well-respected credibility is now on display for the country to see. You know, Jim Comey's the FBI director, and I told you, Jim, last week what happens when you run with these kinds of people. Jim, you're running with dogs, and you know better than I that when you lie with dogs, expect to get fleas. Jim, listen to that comment from Bill Clinton. Jim, my friend, you deserved it. And that's my opening statement. Tell me what you think on my Facebook page or Twitter, hashtag Judge Jeanine.
The arrogance of these people is so great. And some people are critical of the Department of Justice now for not coming up with any prosecutions. I think Joe DeGeneva said that at the beginning of this program this evening. And here's a little short clip of Hillary, what she said about that Sanders going to have to obey the rules that they set up. But here we go with a short clip of Hillary.
Just curious to get your response to hearing that Bernie Sanders said that if he makes it to the convention with the most pledged delegates, that he should be the nominee. That's quite a bit of a change in his stance from 2016. Your reaction?
Well, my reaction is let's follow the rules. We've got rules. We had rules last time, and we have rules this time, and I think it's always a good idea to follow the rules. Everybody knew what they were when you got into it.
In the campaign, in the documentary, you talk about his campaign from 2016, and you call it, quote, just baloney. And I feel so bad that people got sucked into it. Do you still feel that way now?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, that was my authentic opinion then. It's my authentic opinion now. You know, here's one of the saddest things happening right now. The House of Representatives under Democratic leadership has passed 400 bills on really important issues, everything from health care to economic security to election security. It just goes on and on. Does anybody know that, Lindsay? Of course not. Nobody knows that. Change is hard. It's not glamorous. It doesn't fit into a soundbite. And yet the people who were elected in 2018 are down there doing the people's work. And I just think we ought to be more understanding and realistic about what it takes to get change in this big, complicated, pluralistic democracy of ours. And it's not easy, but boy, is it ever worth it. And I just want to make sure that voters know what can be done if they give the White House back to the Democrats.
Hillary Clinton, thank you so much. The docuseries Hillary premieres on Hulu on Friday. We're going to have much more with Mrs. Clinton as we continue this conversation on ABC News Live tonight.
They just keep on doing their arrogant type of ways, and they got the power. There's no prosecutions and so forth. And so they just continue to go on and on and on. And I don't see anything happening to clean up this very, very deep swamp, if you want to call it like that, you know. But another thing that happened earlier this week is that Senator Schumer made some very imposing threats in front of the Supreme Court, and he used Gorsuch and Kavanaugh's names and he caused a firestorm. And this is an excellent report coming out of Fox News Network. Here we go now.
Leading off with a rare and stern rebuke from the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court to the Senate Minority Leader. It comes as the High Court jumps back into the abortion debate. Fox News Chief Legal Correspondent and anchor of Fox News at Night, Shannon Bream, has the specifics, and it was rare. Good evening, Shannon.
Yeah, that's the right word for this, Brett. And it started when the Senate's top Democrat, Chuck Schumer, said this at a rally outside the Supreme Court as the justices were hearing a heated abortion case inside. Quote, I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions. Well, that prompted this response from Chief Justice John Roberts. Quote, justices know the criticism comes with the territory, but threatening statements of this sort from the highest levels of government are not only inappropriate, they are dangerous. All members of the court will continue to do their job without fear or favor from whatever quarter. And just moments ago, a spokesperson for Schumer said his comments were a reference to the political price Senate Republicans will pay for putting these justices on the court and a warning that the justices will unleash a major grassroots movement on the issue of reproductive rights against the decision. Well, he then accused Roberts of taking sides for not calling out President Trump for his comments last week that Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor should have to recuse themselves after they made comments about the president. And it all comes against the backdrop of a high-profile abortion case argued today.
From the moment Donald Trump won the presidency, the left has been warning that his appointments to the Supreme Court would be aimed at one thing, overturning Roe v. Wade. Today, the justices, including two appointed by the president, heard the case of a Louisiana law that requires doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of their clinics. In 2016, the Supreme Court struck down similar portions of a Texas law. Justice Ginsburg questioned the real aim of the Louisiana law and noted how challenging it can be for an abortion provider to gain the necessary hospital privileges. Quote, abortion providers will never, if they're not also doing obstetrics and gynecology, they will never qualify because their patients don't go to the hospital.
It's an underhanded law that is designed to bar access to abortion, which the Constitution guarantees.
But there's a chance the justices may never get to the merits of the case. That's because none of the plaintiffs to the case are patients. Instead, they're an abortion clinic and group of anonymous doctors fighting the Louisiana requirements. Justice Alito spent several minutes questioning whether those doctors could appropriately challenge the very regulatory framework supporters say was designed to protect the health and safety of clinic patients. Quote, you think that if the plaintiff actually has interests that are directly contrary to those of those individuals on whose behalf the plaintiff is claiming to sue, nevertheless, that plaintiff can have standing? Pro-life advocates argue this case isn't about overturning Roe v. Wade, but instead about protecting women who do seek abortions.
I think this case boils down to who do you put first, your patients or your profit?
So the court appeared split on this hot button issue with the possibility Chief Justice Roberts is the key swing vote here. Decision is due by late June. Of course, that's right in the middle of an election year when the Supreme Court is guaranteed, Brett, to be a factor for a lot of folks out there considering their votes.
Shannon, we just got that soundbite from Senator Schumer. You referenced early in the piece. Let's take a listen.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Now, for Schumer's office to say it was a reference to the political price Republicans will pay for putting them on the court and a warning that it'll unleash a grassroots effort, I mean, it's pretty pointed to Gorsuch and Kavanaugh.
Yeah, and he said, you will pay the price. I mean, really the only remedy that he would have to go after them at this point would be an impeachment. Other than that, it sounded threatening enough to the Chief Justice that he thought it was something that needed to be addressed. He very rarely does this, as we've noted. Now, he did say something to brush back President Trump when President Trump referred to a judge as an Obama judge because he'd been appointed by President Obama. The Chief then saying, we don't have Obama judges or Trump or Bush judges. We're all just trying to do a neutral job, and that's what the judiciary does. So another rare statement from him today. We don't get them often, Brett.
That's right. Shannon, thanks so much.
Leader of the Senate, Majority Leader, Senator McConnell had this to say about Schumer's statement and his threats.
Chuck Schumer now says his comments were directed at Republicans. He says they, not the two justices appointed by President Trump, stand to pay a price for decisions on abortion rights cases. Joining us now at a Fox News at Night exclusive, Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky. Good to have you back with us, sir.
Glad to be here, Shannon.
Okay, I want to play a little recap for those who may have missed how we got here.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Now, I should not have used the words I used yesterday. They didn't come out the way I intended to. My point was that there would be political consequences for President Trump and Senate Republicans if the Supreme Court, with the newly confirmed justices, stripped away a woman's right to choose.
So he says, you know, that he was not threatening anyone and that this is being manufactured into something that didn't actually happen. Your response?
I want to associate myself with the remarks of Lawrence Tribe. As a Supreme Court reporter, you know that he's probably the most prominent liberal law professor in America, who issued a statement yesterday saying what Schumer did was completely inappropriate and he ought to apologize. Now, if that was an apology, it wasn't much of an apology. He named the justices by name. He used words that generally are associated with inciting violence. Chuck Schumer ought to know better than that. He didn't just show up yesterday. It reminds me of the Speaker of the House tearing up the President's State of the Union right after he finished speaking. We have a behavioral problem, and I think the leaders of Congress owe it to the American people to act like adults and to not engage in shenanigans like going over in front of the Supreme Court with a rowdy mob and threatening the justices by name.
The senators over there in the Senate, Republicans, are fighting back, and also Devin Nunes in just a recent interview with Lou Dobbs is fighting back also. Here's that interview now.
Joining us now, Congressman Devin Nunes, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, member of the House Ways and Means Committee, and a great American. Let's start first with Ron Johnson going after Burisma to find out what is actually going on while the rest of the Senate seems to be paralyzed. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, welcome to the swamp.
Well, thank you.
You're not here very often. It's great to see you.
Thanks for sharing with me.
Look, this should have happened during the impeachment hoax. Remember when Republicans said, look, we've had an investigation into Ukraine's meddling, why Ukraine was targeting President Trump. Through all that now, it's pretty obvious because of all the news stories that have come out that clearly whatever happened with that big contract that Hunter Biden got should have been answered during the impeachment hoax and would have had Republicans been able to call witnesses. And so, you know, now that the Senate Republicans have control, Ron Johnson's been a good ally. He's very familiar with the FISA abuse and the Russia hoax and the impeachment hoax. And look, if this was a Republican, okay, son of a Republican or a sibling or any relation to a Republican senator or congressman, it would be front page of every major newspaper in the country on every news show. It would be probably equal to the free airtime that Biden's got since Saturday, which is a lot,
which is a whole lot. A considerable amount. The FISA court, very quickly, do you support the president in seeking reform to that?
Yeah, I think we need to. It's important for people to know about FISA that the FISA court was put in because of abuse. So we have to keep the FISA system. But Title I of FISA that's been in law since the late 70s needs to be changed. We can't allow our intelligence agencies and this court to be weaponized against a political party. And so the president is exactly right. We've had many members with the Republicans. I think we're all on the same page that we have to change Title I of FISA to make sure these abuses don't happen.
And it's clear it's clear that we've got to reform the uppermost levels of the FBI, politically corrupt without question, and the Justice Department.
The Democrats are going to try to sweep this under. See,
of course.
There's a section of FISA that's up for renewal right now. And I think that they're going to try to sweep this under the rug. They're just hoping, because, look, FISA does do a lot of good things. It keeps us safe. But at the same time, it can't be used to target us.
Yeah. It's odd that it would be called the Foreign Intelligence Act, because it's the intelligence and counterintelligence has been conducted against Americans, including a sitting president. It's stunning stuff. You and the Washington Post, in an extraordinary battle, a lawsuit against them, seeking to right wrongs by the Washington Post, in which you say flatly, they're lying.
It's been very frustrating, Lou, and that's why I've created this website, defendusa.com, that I like for people to go to join my fight, because no one has been put into the middle of this Russian nonsense more than me, other than maybe the president, okay? The president. But every time they resurrect the Russia hoax, they insert me into it. And so before the coronavirus, the new narrative hit and took over all the media's time, we were on Russia hoax 9.0, whatever the hell it was. And, you know, they claim that I was talking to the president, going to the White House, trying to get the head of the Director of National Intelligence fired. None of that happened. None of it happened. I came out and said it's demonstrably false. That, you know, just the day that night or shortly thereafter, and then they don't do anything about it. They don't take the story down. And then, you know, when I said I'm going to file in court, which is what I've been telling a lot of these news media outlets, so I file in federal court, and I'll bet you this: it's been just like the other lawsuits that I have against CNN and others. The same thing happens every time. They never want to show up in court.
Why not, I wonder?
Because they don't have any evidence. It's impossible for me to have went to the White House or talked to the president since I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Right? So there was multiple hundreds and hundreds of witnesses saw me there. I have a cell phone. They could take me to court. They could subpoena my phone records. Right? There's call logs. Okay? I didn't talk to the president of the United States.
And
on the days that they say that I talked to the president.
And you have offered that to the Washington Post. You've said to them what the facts are. You have declared that their story is wrong. And they say,
we don't know what they're going to say, because we sued them in federal court. So now they have time to go to the court. But my guess is they're going to be like everybody else. They're not going to want to come to the table. And, you know, the court is the only fair place that I have to get what is called, no pun intended, a fair day in court.
Right.
But I can't fight them by trying to argue with them or just come on your show and say, hey, it didn't happen. That doesn't work. Those stories live forever, right? So if you Google my name or you go on the internet, how many fake news stories are out there that are tying me to Vladimir Putin?
Right.
And it's outrageous. When for a long time I was known as one of the top Russian hawks in the Congress. Okay, I've been the guy that was predicting that the Russians were up to no good. And now for almost 4 years now, every chance these lunatics get, and I say lunatics because the lunatics in the media get, they tie me and Trump to Russia.
And it's driven, you believe, purely by ideological cant. It is.
Look, I think there's a lot of reasons, but clearly they're acting with malice. Right. Because and reckless disregard for the truth, because they're mad because everything that I've said, whether from FISA abuse to the Russia thing was a hoax, the Ukraine thing was a hoax, everything I said has been proven 100% accurate.
Right. And you all.
That was Devin Nunes. Coming up next is an interview that Alex Jones had with Anthony Hall. He's out of UK. He's written and researched intensively in the geopolitical field, considered an expert. And listen to this carefully, and then I'll make some closing comments. But they're talking about coronavirus, the COVID-19 crisis. Here we go now.
He's a professor of globalization studies and liberal education, University of Lethbridge, where he's now professor emeritus. The focus of Dr. Hall's teaching, and it goes into it, community service campaign. Professor Hall has published widely in the area of expertise, including the Aboriginal treaties, international law, colonization, some other areas we won't have time to get into. He has responded proactively to the incursions of those targeting his academic topics on their quest to limit academic freedom at universities. His current schedule and research and publication is aimed at bringing to light deeper analysis the very topics that his detractors have targeted him for. That's what I always do. What I get targeted for, what they try to shut down, is what I then focus in on, because that's what they don't want you to look at. So he's written a big report that's up at ZeroHedge.com. It's also on Infowars.com. Who or what started the Wuhan coronavirus epidemic, and how bad is it going to get, and what does he think's really behind it? So, Professor Anthony Hall, thanks for coming on with us, and we've got like 9 minutes left of the segment. I'd like to give you the floor to lay out what you currently think is happening and what's coming.
Well, thank you, Alex. The idea that when you're being attacked for delivering an idea or an investigating something, that might be a sign that you're on the right track.
Yes.
And I noticed I've never seen such a plethora, such an influx of the allegation that, oh, there are these people out there doing conspiracy theorists. And, you know, the mainstream media, the usual suspects, the cabal, have really grabbed onto that phrase in this particular situation. Now, isn't it interesting that the sort of martyr of this situation, Dr. Li Wenliang, who died on February the 7th and was trying to draw attention to this new disease, he had to go into security police. He was told to stop spreading rumors, to stop making trouble, and he had to sign some kind of document. Well, isn't he, in a sense, being called a conspiracy theorist? In our terms, you know, you're accusing the government of things.
A thought criminal. A thought criminal.
Yeah. And of course, the Western media point at him and say, oh, those pathetic Chinese, they're accusing this person. And it turns out he was right. And so how many of these conspiracy theorists in the West, which are being dismissed, are in fact onto something, are criticizing power in a way that power doesn't want? So this topic, you know, it captured my attention. I worked on this paper for 3 weeks and, you know, had to learn a lot of new language like bioweapons, biotechnology. China is very emphasizing. It's very powerful in the area of biotechnology, which it's connecting to artificial intelligence. Anyway, there is much evidence that the source of the virus, the disease, the illness, is not you know, a bad batch of bat soup in the Wuhan market. It's a level 4 research laboratory into pathogens, the most high level type of laboratory in the world. There's one in Canada in Winnipeg, and there's a tie into this story. So people are saying, like your guest Francis Boyle, it's the obvious explanation would be that this disease, that this illness escaped in some way from the biological laboratory. But then when you get into what's going on in China, there was and is this protest in Hong Kong. And it's not in the article, but my sources in China are telling me one explanation is there was a faction in the Chinese Communist Party that wanted to sick this disease on the protesters in Hong Kong who were protesting the Chinese Communist Party, which has been in power since 1949, which is a kind of a very monolithic form of power. Of course, there's not a two-party state or a three-party state in China. There's a one-party state which has had the power since Mao.
That's right, and Trump and the rest of the world has challenged it, and magically the Indian Institutes have scanned the virus. It's man-made. Magically, it just pops up, shuts down the Taiwanese opposition, lets Xi Jinping clamp down, and now magically it's set to try to topple the West.
Yes. Now, there, you know, I don't claim to have the ultimate answer. Now I see that display on the screen here from the uncanny presence of, you know, HIV. I was touched when I saw a clip of you, Alex, where you were saying, well, I initially saw this coronavirus thing as a kind of deep state diversion and an excuse to bring in different policies. But when you saw that the HIV virus is found to be in this
welded in
bioweapon. Yeah, beg pardon?
Welded in. I mean, they admit it's just cut into it. It's just swapped onto it.
And now when they're treating the ill people, they're using HIV remedies and Ebola remedies. So this is increasingly, the evidence is increasing that this is a human-made bioweapon and that it has all the signs in the way the bioweapon is constructed. And now it's supposedly mutating into a S and an L, and the L is more lethal.
That's another point. I'm glad you brought it up. The Chinese government's now saying, this isn't even the U.S. news, I'm glad you raised it. I meant to, that there's another more deadly variant of it.
Yeah. So there is a great deal of literature and, you know, things we could go into great detail about how it seems the Chinese or some faction within the Chinese are responsible for this. But then, of course, there is the story of the military games, which took place in late October, and this opens up the possibility that there is some kind of U.S. dimension to this. And, you know, the United States...
Now, you've got to be honest. We're in a war with them. It's race-specific. And then there's a UN/U.S. Games. It was in Wuhan, wasn't it? And then now this pops up
and
there.
It was in Wuhan. And of course, then there's this Harvard professor, Charles Lieber, who is arrested, very publicly arrested, for all the work he's conducting.
Basically being a Chinese agent.
He's head of the chemistry department. He's head of the chemistry department with a specialty in virology, nanovirology. And so he was working closely with the Wuhan Technological University. And so he has been arrested for that. So there is this U.S. dimension to it. And given that the United States and China, that the business class...
Well, I was about to say, there's different factions, and it's clear, a globalist U.S. faction with the Chi-Coms pretty much had already handed this out before for plausible deniability, and now they've released it to then embarrass Trump. And right before you came on, this broke. We'll come back and talk about this. Pompeo came out today and slams China imperfect coronavirus data for putting U.S. behind curve. We were warning Trump, hey, they're going to blame you for trying to talk this down as your advisors. Now we know Trump's pissed at them. I was already told this by folks in the White House. So they're going to go, oh, sir, they lied. That's why we told you it wasn't a problem. But they clearly tried to set Trump up, Atlantic Monthly and others. So this is getting really sophisticated.
Yeah. And so to think it is, you know, China as a monolith, U.S. as a monolith, hey, the elites of both societies have been interacting a lot.
It's faction wars.
So to imagine it as a Chinese plot or a U.S. plot, and the two are mutually exclusive.
And let me stop you, Professor. I've been interrupting because you're so on target. I'm going to give you the floor when we come back. You're a professor of globalism. You study the interaction of governments and systems. So we come back, explain as an expert in this, the different factions and what's happening. Because now you can see the scripting. We said 5 weeks ago, probably an attack on America, probably an attack on the recovery, probably a Chi-Com event. But working with Western elites, who would have to agree in committee with the Chi-Coms to do this, because that's how communists operate. Professor Anthony Hall, ahtribune.com, is our guest. We really appreciate him joining us. Others, Balasaro's son, just met him last week. We'll be right back on the other side. Infowars.com, tomorrow's news today. All right, Alex Jones here back live. Professor Anthony Hall is a professor of globalization studies and a bunch of other things. But he's really been popular a long time. I was already familiar with his work years ago, but he's been all over the place going through kind of organizing the things that are admitted and confirmed and predicting what's coming next. And look, Mike Adams is really smart, and so is Dr. Boyle, who authored the U.S. Biological Weapons Law that then became the U.N. Treaty in large part. But it's all theoretical. You're hearing all this a month ago, 5 weeks ago, and I'm like, okay, and I got other guests on saying it's not going to happen because I'm trying to hedge my bets. I mean, usually I'm pretty accurate at stuff, but not when it comes to this. The huge response by the Chinese, though, whether it's real or not, is to create a global hysteria. That's clear. To cut off our supply lines. And that's happening. So this is, in my view, modern warfare. But at the time we have in this segment, Professor, without me interrupting, because you made a lot of great points and I jumped in, now you've got Pompeo coming out saying, oh, we didn't have a big enough response because China lied to us about how bad it was. We've been critical of Trump saying, hey, you better get out ahead of this. So have you. So can you speak to that now? This is a pretty big development.
Yeah, well, the Chinese response after they got through the initial denial stage has been enormous. And the spectacle of watching the Chinese build, you know, two hospitals in 10 days or something, this has been something fantastic to perceive. The Chinese, let's be very clear that the Chinese government is on the line here. They've lost a lot of credibility with their own people. And they could lose the power over China. China could have a very different future than what the past has been since 1949. Then we go to U.S., where there is supposedly this proper response. And, I've been listening to True News, Rick Wiles on True News. They do a very good report every day on coronavirus. And like in the Seattle area, for instance, you see a couple of kind of pathetic little sheds that they're going to call quarantine spots. And there doesn't seem to be kits available. And the U.S. response seems weak. Now, might the pharmaceutical companies want to build up the virus to see it decimate the United States a bit more? Might the CDC have an interest in making the virus worse in the United States? It seems to me this is another agenda. What's wrong with the U.S. approach to it? It's nothing like the Chinese approach, and we're being told, relax, it's not going to be that big a deal. And yet we hear about 3.5 billion masks being ordered. Anyway, what's going on in the United States? This is a huge issue. And Trump could be getting some bad advice and could be captured by a cabal that he shouldn't really be listening to. Is Pence really the right person to be heading up this whole government initiative? So to add to the complexity, let's just throw in eugenics here. Alex, I have to say that over the years, I've been following you too, of course, and when I first heard you on eugenics, I thought, well, it's a bit extreme, but you did over time convince me that this is a very major trajectory, and there is Bill Gates, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with the event 2001. He's all over eugenics. He's a key player in it. There could be many agendas, just like 9/11. There are, could be many factions cooperating in a different way. 9/11, raises the idea that if we don't get a handle on this at the beginning, if we don't find out what the true origins are, if the people who made it happen take over the response to the event, then we're in trouble. We're in massive trouble.
We have the entire Hegelian dialectic captured by the group that creates the crisis, offers a solution, and then carries out the solution. And that's exactly what we see happening here now. And you're an expert in globalism. Explain to folks how, I know the audience understands this, but some of the listeners may not. It's not like there's the Russian government or the U.S. government or the Chinese government. There are corporate governmental factions that all work, and that's how people divide themselves. There's probably 7, 8, 9, 10 factions in the CIA that I've seen for myself just covering it, them fighting with each other. It came out in the church committees. So explain that, because we've got globalists clearly working with China, but we can't say that somebody might not have got mad about China, what they're doing, and release this to bring down China. I mean, the point is something big's happening.
Well, you talk about the church committee, which was a response to Watergate, and that's a long time ago. That's the 1970s. Since 9/11, we don't get government investigations, proper investigations on anything, really. We get all this false flag terrorism. We're given an explanation. Just turn the page. Yes, of course, to think that there's a country called Russia, a country called China, a country called the United States, a country called Iran, a country called Israel, and that everybody is under a certain tent subject to, you know, the sovereignty of those countries. The world doesn't work that way anymore, especially since 9/11. Since 9/11, there's kind of been pseudo law brought in. We don't really have laws like we understood in the past, innocent until proven guilty and that kind of thing. So I'm at the stage where I'm trying to identify different scenarios, different factions, without saying conclusively it's this one or that one.
Exactly. You're looking at the factions and who has motives and who might be behind it. That's the first thing to look at.
And then how one faction can complement, can create an aspect of the agenda, and then another faction can kind of pile on and manipulate it. For instance, I find it quite credible that there was a faction within the Chinese Communist Party that said, we don't like these Hong Kong protesters. They're making us look bad. It goes on month after month. What about if we send a biological weapon that in that direction? So
I think that's what happened. I think China's the main culprit because it changes the subject. How did Red Adair blow up oil wells that were on fire? They'd be on for months, burning millions of dollars. They couldn't put them out. He figured out how to send an explosive and detonate it, get rid of the oxygen, and stop the fire. Well, I think China did a controlled detonation like Red Adair of an oil well to change the subject, to have a reset, and then push a bioweapon at the U.S. at the same time.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be as quick to let the U.S. off the hook.
No, I'm not letting it off. I'm just saying, looking at who stands to gain, China's organized response up front and the PR, I'm just saying that's my prime suspect. I agree with you. We should look at factions in the U.S.
Well, it wasn't an organized approach up front. It was denial up front. And then when they were caught in the denial by Dr. Li, then they went into hyperdrive.
Professor, you're right then. Let's talk about that then and what you think's coming next. Because I know you've been talking about people that need to know this is probably pretty serious. How bad do you think from all your research the virus really is and what should people be doing with the man that heads up ahtribune.com? I'm Alex Jones. I head up newswars.com, infowars.com, and I love nationalfile.com and summit.news and, well, a lot of other websites out there as well that are just great patriots. We'll be back. Alex Jones here with tomorrow's news today.
We're going to speak about an article that appeared in today's Wall Street Journal in the review section, and it's entitled The Spanish Flu of 1918. And what's important about this is that this occurred in 1918, and it says that Philadelphia was one of the hardest hit American cities, partly because it was, as the muckraker Lincoln Steffen put it, the worst governed city in America. And he's saying that Philadelphia allowed a parade that drew 200,000 people, and within 72 hours, every bed in the city's 31 hospitals were filled. But on the other hand, St. Louis had the most success of any large American city in fighting the pandemic, and Dr. Max Starloff, the city's health commissioner, said that his goal was to keep the epidemic out of the city, if possible. If that fails, to use every means to keep it down to the lowest possible number of cases. It goes on here in this article. He created an advisory board that included representatives of the city's Chamber of Commerce, schools, medical society, university, Red Cross, and local public health services. He pursued what he called intelligent citizen cooperation through active outreach to the community, and he engaged health department staff, policymakers, and teachers to implement individual quarantines and bans on public gatherings. Now, that last sentence, okay, is very, very important. Teachers to implement individual quarantines. If this epidemic and pandemic, you could say, because it right now it's all over the world, and I'm getting together conference called the Austin Coronavirus Conference 2020, and we're going to meet here in Austin, and it's going to consist of a web stream of about a 10 to 12 hour webcast with doctors, researchers, and other people Skyping in. Some will be around, you could say, be panel discussions around a meeting table and so forth. But anyway, what I see happening now in this coronavirus, and I have about 3 or 4 minutes to speak, and then that'll be the end of the program. But what's happened is not only Wuhan got behind the curve and didn't listen to some of the people trying to announce the alarm, but we have started late, somewhat late, in closing down our borders to air traffic. That means that many people have already flown in and out of here that have infected many hundreds, if not thousands, of American citizens. So right now, I in my opinion, we're just beginning to test. The test kits were available starting Friday, according to recent public announcements and briefings. And so we're just beginning to get those test kits out to the public and to health officials and so forth. So we're only just beginning to realize the number of people that have been affected. Now, as the days and weeks move on and accumulate, we're going to see a greater and greater infection rate. I believe that there have been some pronouncements just recently, emergency that have been declared by cities. You can look those up and see which ones those are. But they're beginning to be pronounced. There's the South by Southwest in Austin was canceled by the city of Austin. There's been beginning to be major, you could say, decisions made to keep the crowds down. And this is what Philadelphia didn't do in 1918, but St. Louis did, see. So, but also, what was important in this article today was that last sentence. It said, and teachers to implement individual quarantine. We need to start talking to the public in a very serious manner to start, if they are not subject to a great illness from this, there's differing opinions that have been coming out on this COVID-19. Some say it's like it's a mild case, you can get a mild case. Others are suffering very severe pneumonia or worse, and then death. So we're seeing a differing case study of the people that contract this. But anyway, those people that can recuperate at home, then that individual quarantine would be a solution to stop the spread of it. Stay at home, have friends, your church congregation bring you food, some water and things like that. They can leave them on the porch. You can leave them money on the porch, they can get the so forth. They can use their own money. You can pay them back later. We need to separate the infected people from the healthy people. But anyway, individual quarantine at home is one solution, and then treating the most severely ill people in hospitals. The hospitals, if we see what we're what's being projected are virtually thousands of people coming down with this illness. And so we can't hospitalize those. We don't have the hospital beds. So the next best thing to do is those that are experiencing a mild, you could say, illness, according to this, could recuperate with medicines and so forth at home. But anyway, let's keep our ear close to the ground. And we're going to killthevirus.world. Killthevirus.world is a site that I have up that I'm building to get together and organize this Austin Coronavirus Conference 2020. So look that up, and thank you very much. We're going to have Anthony Hall's articles up there and some other videos up at thesecrettruth.com. Thank you for listening tonight. Good night, and God bless everyone. Let's work to get through this crisis. Thank you.